at a prompt start. We have a busy agenda today. I will ask Regent West to do the roll call, please.
Thank you, Chair Bell.
Present.
Regent Ball.
Present.
Regent Brinkley.
Present.
Regent Henson.
Present.
Regent McKinney.
Present.
Vice Chair Milken.
Here.
Regent Nichols.
Here.
Regent Spiller.
Here.
Regent Thomas.
Here.
Secretary West here. And Regent Winburn.
Here.
Okay, Mr. Chair, we have 11 regents present. That represents a quorum of the board.
I believe that's a full house. And appreciate everyone being here today. We have our minutes from our fourth quarterly meeting, December 10th. Chance to look at those. So I'll entertain a motion.
Move to stand approved.
A motion and a second. By Regent Thomas is a second to approve the minutes from our fourth quarterly meeting. Any discussion?
Correct.
If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Passes unanimously. The Academic Affairs Committee will start out, and I'll ask Regent West to take over.
Hey, thank you, Chair Bell. We had at our Academic Affairs Committee meeting, we had an approval of the Cybersecurity Data Analytics Master of Science, and I think Provost Fisher has a few words.
Just a reminder that it will be housed in the Gordon Ford College of Business in Information Systems Department, and that it is a master's degree designed for what would be working adults. So it's what we see, and it will create flexibility not only for them but for other people who are looking to go back and get that degree. And it will be, which is great, the new degree will leverage faculty expertise that's already in.
Right. Thank you. Do we have a motion to approve the Master of Science in Cybersecurity Data Analytics?
So moved.
Second.
Any other discussion? Any questions? We will move to a vote then. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And then we have another item that was also approved in our last committee meeting. It's a sabbatical recommendations. And Provost Fisher, do you have anything to say or anything?
Yeah, just to remind everybody that it's 12 faculty members from all the colleges that who are on the list to be able to take sabbatical, which could be either 6 months or one semester or two semesters, depending on their choice. In addition to that, to be eligible, it's 6 continuous academic years of service. An assistant professor or above, a compelling sabbatical application that tells us how they will enrich their professional lives. And with that.
So do we have a motion to approve the sabbatical recommendations? Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Any questions? Okay, we'll move to a vote then. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Great. The motion passes. And next we have the approval of the University Distinguished Professor, which was also mentioned and voted on in our committee meeting. Provost Fisher, do you have anything?
Yeah, I do. It's a pleasure to have the person here today. Dr. John Cipolla is here. He's an outstanding performer as well as teacher. And I have asked him, since it was asked of me, to have him play for a few minutes for us.
Thank you, Dr. Fisher.
And John, please tell him about your career.
Will do. Good morning, Dr. Pavone, Provost Fisher, Board of Regents, and guests. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate the honor and the recognition. I will give you a little brief background on myself and maybe a nice story that I think could be connecting with what I do here at Western for the last 20 years, and then play a short little couple of excerpts, one of the Mozart clarinet concerto, maybe a minute or two of that, and a little jazz piece on the alto saxophone for you. I came to Western in 2002, and I've been a professional musician before that and since then. So I have lived in New York City for quite a number of years as a sort of, I guess you would call it a freelance woodwind player. And that career started when I was actually in college, and I got a call from a contractor who is a personnel manager who hires musicians at Radio City Music Hall, and someone got sick, and I had to drive into New York in my little 5-speed Toyota Tercel, hoping it wouldn't break down. And I made it there, and the musicians in the orchestra pit talked me through the music, and without any rehearsal, I just went in and played, and I must have done an okay job, so they hired me back, and then that became my position there for 34 years. I just retired from that job this past year. While I was in New York, I played in a lot of different venues. I played with a lot of different musicians, Liza Minnelli, Liberace, Dizzy Gillespie, Dionne Warwick. I mean, there's a long list of people that I would have performed with while at Radio City Music Hall or in various other venues. I've been on a lot of recordings. Part of what I would do is, to give you a little insight in what we do as musicians, we often have little specialties, and my specialty is the clarinet and the saxophone and also the flute as well. And so when people would want to have a recording made that they need a specialist on those instruments, they would know the pool of people that would be good at those things, and that's what I would be often called to do. So if there was a recording of an artist, Mandy Patinkin is one that comes to mind, who was in some TV shows. We did a very big record for a whole week with him and Dawn Upshaw, another singer, of a Leonard Bernstein show called On the Town. And we performed that at the Lincoln Center City Opera for 2 weeks, and then we did a weeks-long recording of that. So all of those jobs would come up throughout my weeks and months, in addition to my, I guess you'd call it my day job, meaning working at Radio City Music Hall, and I would also play Broadway shows. So the longest one I did was the show Cats. I was there for 9 years. And when I was hired here at Western, one of my colleagues in the music department asked me, well, how could you do the same thing for 9 years in a row? And I have to tell you that it's not about the repetition of the music. It's about playing the instrument and being as precise. Those audience members are coming there to hear something that they will probably never hear again in their lives, and it was our job to be as high-level professionals as we possibly can. So we really do try to be on our A game every single time we come in to perform professionally. I have, over the last, I'd say, about 12 to 15 years, have developed some friendships, professional friendships with colleagues, particularly in Italy, but throughout South America and actually various parts of Europe. I have some very good friends in Belgium who are mostly clarinet people, but some saxophone people, Hungary, France, quite a few. And so I have, through those friendships, I've been invited to judge competitions. I've probably judged about maybe about 10 or so international clarinet competitions. And to give you a perspective on what that is that they're looking for experts who have a reputation. So there's no application for those kinds of things. They seek out people who they know have a pretty substantial reputation to give very precise feedback on these competitors. So as I've gone to those competitions, if they like the result, not who wins or who doesn't win, but the honest result of the adjudication, then they invite you, kind of probably like a lot of other professions, invitations through recommendation. So in the last number of years, I've been to Bulgaria, Czech Republic a couple of times, Peru twice, Italy countless times. And so that has also led into festivals. People invite me to perform at festivals as well. Portugal, I've been there about half a dozen times. Now, since the pandemic, all that kind of stopped, but it's going to start to ramp up again, so I'll look forward to that. Interestingly, I've been able to do this while working here, and I have to curtail what I do. I don't get calls every day for these things, but often about twice a year I would go out somewhere. And while I was still working here at Western, I was commuting to New York. And so fact, a recent Richard Weigel, I think, Richard, history professor who recently retired a few years back, I saw him on an airplane one day coming back because his daughter lives in New York. He said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Well, this is my weekend job." And so I would teach Monday through Thursday, teach all my students, and then get on an airplane on Thursday afternoon, get in there, and the most efficient way was actually, believe it or not, a bus and a subway into Manhattan. And then I would just get in the orchestra pit. I have a father-in-law who lives in Brooklyn, and I would often stay with him for a few days and visit with him, perform Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, get back on the plane, and come back and teach Monday morning. There have been some times when I've had to come back even just for one day. We've had some very important events in our music department where I'll come back on a Sunday, do the event Monday, and then go back to New York on Tuesday. So that has kind of curtailed from the pandemic, and also after enough years, I've decided to put my energies towards other things and maybe just slow down a little bit. One quick story I would like to tell you, and I was going to just be a little symbolic here. This is a reed. It's a piece of wood. This piece of wood is actually from Argentina, and I have actually two very good friends in Argentina. One who makes reeds, he's from this company, Gonzalez Reeds, but another who performs down in our a colleague of mine. We've made a recording together. We've performed numerous concerts in a clarinet quartet together. I look at these every day. I have them all over the house. My wife complains about them. They're everywhere because this is what helps me make my sound and my instrument. But to me, the symbolism of this little piece of wood is kind of generational. So when I started to work at Western some years ago, about the second or third year, I had a student named Ricky. And Ricky was a first-generation college student. He didn't really want to come to college, but he kind of thought that's the thing to do. His dad is a mechanic. His dad worked on cars and really wanted him to go into that business with him. And so he, just like a couple of his friends from Grayson County, he decided to come to college. So he didn't go to all his classes. Sometimes he didn't do so well in some classes. And I had a few heart-to-heart talks with him through the years, through the semesters. And by around the fourth or fifth semester, I had a heart-to-heart talk with him, and I said, "Ricky, first of all, you need to stop smoking cigarettes. Second of all, you need to come to class. And third of all, if you want to actually do something, you want to be an auto mechanic, go do that. But if you want to be in college, stop wasting your money and come to school." And so I don't know that I made a difference with him in particular, but around that sixth or seventh, sixth semester or so, he started showing up to class. And by then, within the student teaching semester, he was a music education major. Most students wait till the summer to start looking for teaching jobs. I think by about April, he had a job lined up in Breckenridge County. Within 2 years, he was bringing students down to us, to our events, as possible students to come to our programs. He became a hero up in Breckenridge, a band director, a music director. Some years later, 5 years later, Penny comes, knocks on my door. "I want a lesson with you. Who are you?" "Well, I'm one of Ricky's students, first generation." So Penny went through our program. She wanted to do three different majors. She finally settled on music, and she pursued through our program. She graduated. Ricky moved up to be an elementary school principal. Penny took over his job. I got another knock on my door. It's Amber. "Hi, who are you?" "I'm one of Ricky's last students before he went to take this teaching job." "But do you know Penny?" "Of course, yes, she's up there." It's three generations now. And so when I look at these reeds, that's kind of what I think. This reed is about 15 years old, and it's brand new. And it has to be cured and dried and turned in the sun in Argentina and cared for over time. And that's, I think, what we do as teachers, what I do. And we work with these young people, and they're not perfect. But that face-to-face contact that we give them is really what keeps them connected here. And so Breckenridge County, today I'm going to go up and work with a Grayson County student who, again, probably four generations before me, when I first started working here, we had a graduate who was already graduated in teaching in Logan County, and he's still sending us students because he knows what we do. So I meet with them one-on-one, these students. That's my job. Studio teacher one-on-one. Sometimes I work in small ensembles. When I can get off campus, I go out to the public schools. I've been in Bowling Green High School this semester every Wednesday. So that's who I am, a little bit of who I am. And then I thought I'd just play a little bit for you. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take up work your meeting time. I'll try to make it brief here, because I do know you have a lot of activities to attend to today. Mozart wrote a clarinet concerto that is now played all over the world. It's probably the most famous piece for the clarinet ever. And I'll just play a very short excerpt of this three-movement piece for you.
Awarded to Ms. Angela Alexander Townsend and an honorary doctor of public service to Mr. Abram Williams. And I'd like to take just a few seconds to talk about each one of them, if that's okay. First of all, Ms. Townsend had a distinguished 40-year or close to 40-year career in education. During her career, she received numerous awards, including the Kentucky Distinguished Educator, and was inducted into the Kentucky Teacher Hall of Fame. Ms. Townsend is a former resident of Jonesville, and I believe by honoring her, we're really honoring the residents of Jonesville and the contributions they made to the university, to the area, and to the state. Mr. Williams spent his lifetime in service and commitment to the well-being of others. Mr. Williams serves as the Executive Director of the Housing Authority of Bowling Green, where he has served as an advocate for people who are seeking safe and reliable housing and opportunities to grow beyond their current circumstances. He's also gone farther than that. He's established the after-school tutoring program as well as the welfare to work program, which are two of the many ways that he has given back to the public to make Bowling Green a better place. And I think they're two really good people who I think we can do a great job by giving them an honorary doctorate.
Bowling Green native, very familiar with these two individuals, and I think given all of the things that have been going on and the great progress that the university's made in diversity, this is just outstanding. And knowing these two people personally and been engaged with them, I would stand as a testament to the contribution that they've made to helping many people in Bowling Green strive and an upward path for mobility. So I'm honored that the university is considering this.
I can join in that. I've been around here for many years myself, and I know these folks work, and I particularly know of Abraham Williams' work, and he continues to do that same work. It's not something in his past. It's an ongoing, everyday proposition with him, and I think these are highly deserved, and I highly recommend it as well.
I would have to say that I concur with George and Curry. I've known Abraham many years and have worked with him on many programs, and he is a lovely human being. So I agree this is a great honor.
Rudy West,
I'll add my comments. As president, there are few things that are as enjoyable is making these phone calls, and, both to Ms. Thompson and to Mr. Williams, both to a T, humble, surprised, gracious, and more than deserving because of their work. They're just fine human beings, and they are exemplars of what we all strive to do because of our time here at the university. So I was thankful for the opportunity, and I look forward to for those of you who do not know them, introducing you to them at commencement this May.
Do we have a motion to approve the honorary degree recommendations for Mr. Williams?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Williams?
Yes.
Mr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Curry?
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Regent West, for interesting, entertaining academic affairs. We'll next turn to finance and budget. We have Regent Penny here to present that for us today. All four items on our agenda today were presented at the committee and voted. Would anybody like to pull out any of the items for separate consideration? All right. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda, items FP1 through FP4.
So moved.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, George. Does anybody have anything that they would like to discuss with these items? Hearing no discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. All right. tonight. Consent agenda passes, and we have no presentations, so that is the shortest ever.
Leadership.
you deserve it. Yeah, I need it. You deserve that. So, thank you very much. We'll move right on to the executive committee meeting. We have several items on it for our approval. And first one, we did discuss at the last meeting in terms of utility easement for Chick-fil-A. On that. Okay, that was covered and discussed. Anything new?
Nothing new on this end.
Okay. All right. I will entertain a motion then.
So moved.
Second. Have a motion. The left and a second from the right. And any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye. Pose like sign. Utility easement is approved. We have with us today our athletic director, and I think he may wish to make a few remarks or brief presentation concerning the next two items. We'll take the first one. We'll do them one at a time.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Bill. Good morning, everyone. We're on a roll until now, so I'm going to try to just a real quick overview, and then obviously would be happy to take any questions. I think, as you all know, there's 14 schools in Conference USA, and we are 13th in budget in Conference USA. And in most conferences across the country, there's a pretty direct correlation between those who spend the most win the most, those who spend the least win the least. Proudly, we have defied that. That has not been the case here. And the reason is because of our people, most notably our coaches. You know, I really feel like we have a collection of coaches that are outstanding, the two that we're talking about today, very much so. And I think the important thing for us, when we have great coaches who recruit true student athletes and have success on and off the court, is that we maintain continuity. And so that's what we have. Obviously, both have been here, but I don't know which one you want to talk about first, like Tyson Helton maybe.
We'll do the volleyball.
Travis Hudson. Travis has been here 27 years, and we are fortunate to have him. He's had many opportunities to leave Western Kentucky, but you know, sometimes it's a cliche. People say WKU is in my DNA, but in Travis Hudson's case, it is 100% the truth. And I think he's not just an ambassador for athletics, but I really think the whole university. In the last 10 years, it's incredible what he's done. 7 of the last 8, we've made the NCAA tournament. The last 3, we finished in the top 25 in the nation. So this really just acknowledges that, gives him an increase. In both these cases, the increase in pay is coming from private funds through the Hilltopper Athletic Foundation. It's not part of the state budget.
We have in our packet the recommendation. So I'll consider a motion for item number 2, approval of the athletic employment contract for our head volleyball.
So moved.
Second.
Motion in a second. Any discussion?
Chair Bill, if I could just say quickly, as a Coach Hudson is a graduate of my department in our college, and as such, you know, we take great pride. I think he's probably the only one who's had a leadership profile of him in Forbes magazine, I think it was. And, you know, he's got great accolades, obviously, in what he does. And I would also just point out what a great campus citizen he is. He comes back to pre-pandemic, and we say that a lot, pre-pandemic. I could convince him to come back and speak to my class once a year and watch him connect with the students. And this was something he would just do to try to connect and make a difference. And I saw him make a difference with those students. And so it's rare that on any academic campus that you have someone from athletics willing to come in and try to make that difference, and he absolutely does that. So it is with great pride that I see this and recognize someone who has been completely committed to this university in every way, and I think we should be recognizing that in a profound way, and I'm glad to see it here.
Good. Very quickly, you know, when we talk about the history of the university and people that will have made an impact as employees, Coach Hudson is someone that has dedicated his professional career to this school. Quite literally, for those that know him, know he is an actual hero. He has saved lives. And I cannot think of another employee that I admire more on this campus right now, Travis Hudson. So I think this is an outstanding move.
Very nice. Very good.
Mr. Chair, I echo the sentiments and also want to add, if you think about our level of competition in volleyball, success has been terrific. But what is even more impressive is Coach Hudson's managed to do that with essentially a perfect graduation rate. Every student who comes here to play volleyball gets a degree and goes on to a professional career. And it is exactly what we aspire to do for athletics here at the university. There's an expectation for winning, which we meet, but more importantly, it's for transforming lives through education. He is a shining example of that.
Hearing comments like that and hearing Professor Chipolin, you see what sort of contact our students have with professors and coaches who are great human beings. Is something that does separate Western Kentucky University from a lot of other places. So, any further discussion?
You don't get any better than 100% graduation rate.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Item number 3 concerns our football coach.
Thank you. I'll actually add one more thing on Coach Hudson really quick that I think just speaks to the culture that he's created. It's not a great time for collegiate athletics as a whole in terms of transfers and just the change in the system. It's a little troubling, to be honest with you, but in the 27 years that Travis has been our head volleyball coach, in 27 years, we've had 2 players transfer out of the program. So I think it just speaks to the culture that he's created and really for unity. On Coach Helton, this is his second go-around here. He was here on Jeff Brom's staff for 2 years as an assistant coach, 2 outstanding years, one of which we won a conference championship, both of which we won a bowl game. Then we brought him back in 2019 to be our head coach. 3 years he's been our head coach. We've been to a bowl game each of the 3 years. We've won the bowl game twice. We won a conference championship this past year. And actually, our quarterback set the all-time college football records for touchdowns and passing yards in the season this past year. We got a lot of notoriety from that. And we'll continue to as Bailey Zappi approaches the NFL draft, the NFL combine session going on right now for the draft in April. And I think with Coach Helton, what this does is just, again, just recognizes, you know, what he's done. For us, if you know our history, we've had a lot of success, which has been good. Unfortunate byproduct more times than not when we've had success is our coaches have left for other opportunities, and Coach Helton wants to be here, and I think this just increases our chances to keep him here.
Good. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
And a second for approval of the athletic employment contract for our head football coach. Any discussion?
If I could just ask him. I'm supportive of this, so this has not been as a challenge anyway, but just as we watch the exponential salary growth in college athletics, football just exploding and driving so much of the change, your general philosophy, right, what's your guiding principles in trying to manage all those salaries, given, as you said, we're not spending as much as some of our competing institutions, how are you approaching this and looking at what you're seeing across the country?
Well, what we really try to sell is the overall package here. I mean, if it's only about the money, then we're probably not as likely for people to leave. I mean, we're probably more likely that they leave. So we have to be fair on the financial side, but we try to create an overall situation that is a great work environment. And I think that's really helped. With Coach Helton, you know, I would point out in 2013, our head football coach made $850,000. 2022, our head football coach will make $900,000. Most places in the country have had an enormous growth in 9 years. But the fact that we've been able to have the success we've had and I think still be responsible within our budget, and I'm not denying the fact that $900,000 is a lot of money. I wouldn't try to pretend otherwise. It is, obviously. But comparatively speaking, nationwide, we're seeing a lot of examples where people are paying a lot more of that, even at the group answer. I hope that answers your question. We just try to create the overall work environment here that is healthy and people want to be a part of. And obviously, there is an opportunity for growth. We have lost a number of assistant coaches. That's just the way it is. But you know, we all feel, and I've always felt, I'd rather have the challenges that come with winning than the challenges that come with losing. And one of the challenges that comes with winning is occasionally people leaving and having to deal with that. And that's better than the alternative.
What's the budgetary implication as far as this is concerned?
Same as Coach Hudson's. It'll come through the Hilltopper Athletic Foundation private funds. It's $100,000 annual increase.
Mr. Chair, if I may as well, the off-the-field success of our football team also is impressive. The vast majority of students who play football for us have a GPA above 3.0. And that is unusual in collegiate sports. It's even more unusual in collegiate football. And if you watch what Coach Helton has done, he has retooled and managed staff turnover in each of the years because of the great success we've had. He will do that again this year. And to my eye, it's both the stability in the program that's important and for the sake of the program success, you never want a coach or an athletic director in the final year of their contract, because that creates uncertainty. Other coaches will use that against the institution to create the perceived uncertainty. And so I appreciate us doing this in year three and not having to wait till the end of year four, which actually would cause us some significant difficulty.
It's also important to point out that a lot of the success has to do with the culture that is established, and the athletic director has a lot to do with that. Not that you can absolutely prevent an incident like the Wisconsin-Michigan State after-game incident, but I do think we emphasize having good people, and hopefully we don't have any problems like that.
I would just echo what you're saying in that. When you think about Big Time Athletics, what we've been able to achieve here is pretty impressive. It really is. And then to do it at the financial level that we're doing it. God, you're right. You don't want to say $900,000 is not a lot of money, but when you look at other institutions that are paying a whole lot more that are having less success than what we're having, I do think it's the leadership, both at the university level and at the athletic department. But it is phenomenal. It's an entertaining thing that's on the field that we get to see that we're winning. And I just think we ought to commend you as well for the work that you're doing, that to be able to keep them and retain them as long as we can so that we can continue to be successful.
Yeah. Any other comments? Discussion? I'll entertain a motion. Have I already entertained a motion? I believe I have.
Yes.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Like sign. Very good. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you all.
All right. Mr. President, I'm going to turn executive item number four over to you.
Very good. Mr. Chair, some introductory comments for our Vice President for Philanthropy and Alumni Engagement, Amanda Tribute, who's joining us here. Really pleased about this opportunity. I had the great privilege of knowing Jim and Eva Martins my first go-around in Bowling Green. And we got to know one another, although not closely, when I cooked bananas Foster for them table-size at Andrews. And there are interesting times in one's life. I got to do that again for them at dinner at the house when I first returned as president, and have been so thankful for their leadership, their kindness, and their investment in this institution and our people. And so we have a tremendous announcement today. I've talked with the chair about our need as an institution to think about cultivating and developing the next generation of philanthropy at the university. And while Jim and Eve have been important investors over time, the size of this gift is special. Ranks them among the largest donors now in WKU history. So with that, Amanda, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, President Cavone. honored to seek approval today for a philanthropic naming opportunity for Eva and Jim Martins for the Eva and Jim Martins Alumni Center. Jim is a native of Michigan and arrived here on the Hill to graduate in 1972 with a degree in agriculture. When you speak with Jim, you'll hear him talk so fondly about his time on the Hill and those mentors who really shaped his life and his lifelong commitment to the city of Bowling Green. Upon graduation, Jim also made his first gift to the Hilltopper 100, which is the precursor to the Hilltopper Athletic Foundation. That was in 1972 when he purchased his first season tickets. He's not missed a season since, so a 50-year ticket holder for WKU Athletics. Eva and Jim have supported countless initiatives across the university. Students, our faculty, and our programs, and particularly our athletics teams and their students. They've also tremendously impacted our community, serving on a variety of boards with volunteerism and their philanthropy. At WKU, Jim has served on a variety of boards, most notably the HAF board, WKU Foundation Board of Trustees, and our real estate corporation. Eva and Jim currently own J. Moore Properties, serving as real estate investors across Kentucky, Tennessee, and Indiana. The WKU pride runs deep in the Martins family. All four of their children are alumni, three of their spouses, and one granddaughter today. Today we make this request in recognition of a new commitment of more than $5 million that the Martins family has committed to WKU to support WKU Alumni Association, WKU Athletics, through a current pledge and a state commitment. This naming opportunity represents a new era for our work to bring Hilltoppers back together on the Hill in our beautiful alumni facility on campus.
Yes. A lot of time and effort and work has gone into that. Fan of athletics, but understands the greater mission of the university. The importance of an alumni center that brings not only alumni but visitors. So this is a special announcement and a special day.
Good job, man.
I'll entertain a motion and then we can have other comments.
I can do this one, please.
Okay.
I think that the role of Martins and being on boards with him and also being part of the Alumni Association National Board, I can't think of a better couple.
Add motion. Regent Henson, do I hear a second? Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second from Regent West. All right. Any other comments, discussion?
It's worth noting publicly for the record, even though it's in our notes, that the 50-year ticket holder, that's very impressive. But the joint gifts for 41 consecutive years, I think, is a testament to the real importance of what WKU means to the region. When you've got a couple that are that dedicated, and we see that over and over, right? But I think it's absolutely worth publicly acknowledging that 41-year consecutive joint gifts. I mean, that's just an impressive thing.
Any other comments? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Like sign. Motion passes. We have some information.
Mr. Chair, it's my pleasure to introduce to you Mr. John Mark Francis and Ms. Andrea Hales will be presenting next about our marketing communication efforts. John Mark and Andrea were recently promoted in a reorganization of the marketing communications office. Some of you may well remember that conversation from the fall. They have done a terrific job. These two, along with Jace Lux, are the communications and marketing triumvirate for the university. And in many ways operate in concert with one another to create a strategic direction for us. And I've been really pleased to work with them.
to mentor them, as I would call it, to critique them, as they might call it, yeah, but most importantly, to grow talent here within the university. And so I'm pleased to have them share with us the work that they've been engaged in for many years, but certainly as leaders of the division for the past 9 months.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. We're always excited to talk about the ways in which we continue to reimagine and reinvent marketing's role in supporting the recruitment and retention of students to WKU. So I'll talk a little bit to begin this morning about how higher ed traditionally structures marketing alongside divisions of enrollment management. WKU enrollment management falls to Enrollment Student Experience, Global Learning and International Affairs, the graduate school. Those are the individuals who conduct the on-the-ground recruitment of students, helping them progress through the enrollment funnel from prospective student to enrolled student. And university marketing offices have always historically operated largely separately from those functions. They focus on brand guidelines and establishing top-of-the-funnel brand awareness. But we were charged with completely reimagining that approach to the relationship. The private sector over the past two decades has more closely merged operations of marketing and sales so that they're working more closely in customer development along the way. So we've implemented portions of that here at the university, much of that here, so that we still do brand guidelines and help guide the institutional narrative arc. But we're also much more involved with air support in the recruitment of students that occurs at each funnel stage and through each of these divisions. So as the university was making this fundamental shift, we were also met with a brand new generation of students arriving on college campuses. The digital natives, the students who have spent their entire life curating their own music collection through Spotify or Apple Music, students whose news feeds are tailored to them through their social media channels. And what this meant was this generation of incoming traditionally aged college students was no longer receptive to the communication plans of the past. The idea that we have a binder and everyone gets the same message at every point throughout the year is finished. And what we have now is an era where nearly 100,000 separate communication plans have to exist. This is the number from Allison Campbell in the Office of Undergrad Admissions on the number of prospective first-time, first-year students that they have in the flow. And so each communication plan has to be a little bit different, and so does our marketing approach throughout the way. It requires a significant amount of data to get to this, and another area from which we've borrowed a page from the private sector. There are national data firms that provide clustering and persona information to help guide audience awareness. And so instead of analyzing customers, we analyzed our students and sought to learn a little bit more about who our students are. We know things like their average household income, the types of TV channels that they watch, that they generally drive American cars with an auto loan that's less than 3 years old. This is an actual cluster for WKU that represents between 15 and 20% of our incoming class. For competitive advantage reasons, I'm not going to include the name of it. But we also get at household information like their parents' occupation. You see in this group, the majority, or at least the preponderance, their parents work in craftsmen or blue-collar positions. So if you think about how we activate that data, think about our institutional messaging. Climb with us. Climbing to greater heights. Life at the top is worth the climb. It does a couple of things. It's fundamentally true about the WKU experience because we all know that hilltoppers climb, but we also know that that messaging that conveys grit and perseverance and determination resonates with the students who are enrolling at the university. We also activate sales data like the responsiveness to items mailed to their home. We know that this group is 26.2% more receptive to mailed items than the general population. So that, of course, informed the strategy to significantly increase the number of items mailed by 240% over the past few years. All of this data is helping us to be more personalized in our communication. And it's not just inserting the student's name into a communication. We did that a few years ago, and we thought we would check the box and be done. But that's not what personalization is. Personalization involves shifting the language entirely from talking about what we do as a university to what the individual student can do and the opportunities that are afforded to them on campus. And it also means that communications have to be deployed and advertising has to be sent at times that are most relevant for those prospective students, whether it's a campaign that's launched after they visit campus for a tour or whether it's information about a specific academic program. The advertising that we do as an institution, the paid outreach, also has to be increasingly targeted along the way. So it's no longer about just that top-of-the-funnel brand awareness, but really inserting calls to action throughout the process.
so that if we have a student who's expressed an interest but hasn't applied for admission, we can serve digital ads that say apply now. If they've been admitted but haven't registered for orientation, university marketing is deploying advertisements that say it's time to register for orientation at WKU. All of this is also population specific. We need to communicate differently to adult students than we do transfer students, differently to in-state students versus out-of-state students, so looking at geolocation information. And the other thing is that all marketing needs to be multi-channel. It's not just digital ads, it's not just postcards or email campaigns. We also need to look at how we deploy terrestrial advertising, like billboards, and use data to guide that to know that it's most effective in areas for where household incomes are above $100,000 and primarily effective for individuals under 34 years of age. So thinking about those things, TV advertising. The majority of our traditionally aged demographic watches television exclusively through streaming services. So we've shifted our ad buys away from broadcast television toward Roku and Hulu and streaming services like YouTube TV. As we continue this work, the idea that if you're not a prospective student and you're not seeing the significant growth and outreach that we've done, it probably means that we've done things correctly because we're trying to target the students who are going to enroll. None of this work is possible without significantly deepening the partnerships we have with the communications and marketing professionals across campus. Over the past few years, we've done a lot of work in breaking down this house of brands and building more toward a branded house with a consistent look and feel. There's a reason that many of the things you see appear red and white, and it's not just Reach and Henson because the fight song calls us to raise the red and white above the rest. It's because we want that common visual identity for the university, so that the work that one unit does is buttressed by the work that another unit does. And when an item lands in the mailbox, it's instantly recognizable as something from WKU. One of the reasons that I was asked to, or invited to speak is questions about how we market specific programs and how we support the recruitment that occurs in those departments and units. When we talk personalized, we have to talk about the area of interest, where a student is, what major they've intended. The Office of Undergrad Admissions right now currently has 90 active academic message campaigns and over 400,000 emails so far this year on specific academic programs. But we also have to be prepared when new programs come online. So in March of 2021, the university approved an online Bachelor of Social Work program. Anna Kerr in Academic Affairs Marketing set out on a paid advertising campaign. Over the course of the year, they had 116,000 impressions, 62 inquiries, and 21 students enrolled in that program in the first year in the middle of a pandemic because of the digital advertising and the funnel stage specific information that was rolling out. This partnership also involves communication and marketing professionals from across campus and getting them together and sharing information and sharing insights and sharing some of this data and to make sure that we're all singing from the same sheet music. And the sheet music is our strategic communication calendar that has key themes for the month and events that are coming up, as well as reminders for all of these marketing and communication professionals across campus to hit on items that touch on our brand pillars so that we're consistent in our messaging across the university. I'll give you one example of how over the past 30 days we've blended together professionals from across campus, the university's paid and earned media strategies. Coming up on March 31st is the priority deadline for housing applications for prospective students and participation application to participate in the LLCs. So we really focused on how can we build interest in that. We kicked it off with a video beginning of February to soften the ground, explain a little bit more about what LLCs are. Then on February 14th, we really started a blitz. President Caboni emailed campus with news of the record-breaking retention success, calling out specifically success in those LLC communities. We issued a press release, which got wide coverage. We started a social drip campaign. Amy Bingham DeCesare in communications and marketing does View from the Hill, which airs on local television and also goes to 10 radio stations across the Commonwealth talking about living learning communities and retention success. We started a paid campaign targeting prospective students and their families to remind them about what an LLC is. We held an event, the first year dedication event, on February 23rd, which also picked up media attention along the way. And all of this is driving toward the and supporting the work that the Office of Admissions is doing in talking through and reminding of the upcoming housing and residence life deadline and the LLC deadline. So I'll turn things over to AVP Hales to talk through some of our key messaging and ways to stay connected.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Hi, good morning. I'm Andrea Hales, Assistant Vice President for Strategic Communications and Media Relations. As John Mark shared with you, we collaborate frequently on university communication campaigns, like the one that we just walked through here on our most recent retention gains, which were terrific. He is passing out a couple of things right now, but if I could provide you with just one more tool as it pertains to this particular campaign. On the note card that he is working around the room here on, you will see the key messages that we use throughout the duration of the campaign through each of these steps. And really these served as the heart of each step along the way. And essentially there are three. Our fall to spring retention was the highest on record in the university's history. That was one. Two, those retention gains were across the board, from our low income and our first generation students to our underrepresented minority students. And then three, those students who participated in a living learning community in the fall semester persisted at a rate almost 6% higher than those who did not. So just another tool for your toolbox there. And then finally today, we want to make sure that we make it easy for you to engage in all WKU news across the university. So on the second page in front of you, we've made a list of some of those easy ways, some of those main ways to connect. You should already be receiving President Caboni and Provost Fisher's bi-weekly email messages that are sent to our faculty and staff. You should now also be receiving the Today at WKU newsletter that we send out every Tuesday and Thursday during the academic year and once a week during the summer. And also our View from the Hill that John Mark referenced, our weekly video report that airs every Thursday. Additionally, as we create and submit our quarterly newsletter to CPE, we'll get that in your hands as well. But now on the right side of the page, social media. If you go to the website listed here, you can sift through the 156 institutional social media channels that we have. And you are likely following some, if not many, of those channels already to get much of the news across the institution. But if not, we have listed a few here that we think would be a good starting off point to engage in that way. And so with that, Beth, if you don't mind, I will get these handouts to you electronically as well so we can get those to the board for Linda, who's not here today. If you have any questions, we are happy to answer those at this time.
Questions?
I have a comment. No question. Really impressive. Glad to see this being done. Being someone who's also in higher education, my provost mentioned to me the other day that said any college or university that doesn't understand it's a business, and that's a college, versus a college that does business, is going to. This is an example of us recognizing that we better understand that there's a business of recruiting students and retaining students and promoting what their university does. And thinking about it from a concept of how businesses do this, this is not moving away from higher ed. You know what our value proposition is. It's how we tell the story and get people to come here and participate, and then that we can actually give that value to them. So I commend you for doing it. And it's, again, recognition that we're going to survive for the future because we recognize that the game has changed. We've got to change it. So, good job.
And in the same vein, I see the correlation between what's happening in healthcare, where that's becoming more personalized. Genetics is playing a big role in that, but that's really what you're doing, reflecting all that data. In a way, you're looking at the genetic background and utilizing that information. And as George alludes to, we all know the cliff is like 2-3 years away. Students weren't born, so if we weren't doing things like this, I shudder to think where we might be. So kudos for shifting the paradigm and being front edge of recreating how we do business.
So a question or two. A few years ago, it's been more than a few years ago now, but anyway, at one point I started a number of social media accounts in my own department and then was getting invited to some marketing meetings on campuses and coordination. And of course, I just was like, hey, we need to have a Twitter and a Facebook, and we did, and the next thing I know, I'm getting roped into marketing, which was not my thing, but I just was an early adopter of social media. That's how it happened. I'm just curious now, as we have the colleges being encouraged to, I don't want to say do their own thing, but take responsibility for their own areas is perhaps a better way of saying it. And I'm seeing various colleges taking on marketing roles within that college. The coordination across the university messaging and the college messaging and how that's going to work, or what's your idea here?
Great question. So Shane, a couple of years ago, I think it was November of 2019, we created what we call the Communications Cabinet. That cabinet consists of those marketing and communication colleagues across the university. In each of our colleges, in each of our divisions, our units, HRL, advising, housing, it's all across the institution. And so we did that for that reason, so that we could bring that group together. And at that point in time, we also created the Strategic Communications Calendar. We create this each semester, as it's different each semester, with those monthly themes. But then along the left side here, we can send this out too, it ties into our strategic plan. And so every month when we meet with those colleagues, we walk through this calendar, and then we share from a higher level what's coming up, what we're working on. But then as importantly, we go around the table, there's 22 on that committee, and we understand what they're working on within their colleges and their units and their departments, and then how can we help, how can we share best practices, those kinds of things. So hope that answers your questions. And when you look at the 156 social channels, those are because they're across the university, high-level, low-level programs, departments. Big Red has its own channel now. So, you know, there's a reason that there's that many.
I have, I guess, a question and a comment. There's so much out in the public now about everyone doesn't need to go to college, which I realize is true, but about this workforce development, and that's not, there's a lot here in Bowling Green, but I mean, it's kind of all over, and about the need for all these jobs that are open and need to be filled. How do you how do you address that? And I think this looks like a good plan, but those people are really, a lot of students, high schools and all of that, are being targeted to fill those jobs that are unfilled right now with industry. And certainly we have tons of industry here in Warren County, and I'm not negative, but that's great, but it's just, there's just a lot of, and I just recently was at a chamber meeting where this was a big discussion, so it's kind of on my mind how you combat that.
Well, it's one of those, you're exactly right, it is a challenge. During the pandemic, we thought that there might be a gap year or that students might just take a year off. Nationally, fewer than 2% of students actually went back to college as things started opening back up from the pandemic. And one of the reasons is that starting wages in some positions have raised 15% in the past year. So it makes it more appealing. But what we have to do is we have to pivot our messaging and talk about the long-term benefits of higher education. Higher education is still the best investment that a 17-year-old can make. It has the power not just to transform their income, but to transform their future generations. So we've had to back our messaging up and talk a little bit more at that top of the funnel about the value of higher education and why that a college degree is worth it. And it's an education campaign for our prospective students as well as their families to not just look at the starting wages of that first position when a student graduates high school, but look at that lifetime earning potential and that extra $1 million, according to U.S. Census figures, that an individual will earn if they have a college degree when they enter the workforce.
And that certainly is true. The best way to get that message out is through as much contact as you can have. And I'm sure it is a challenge, but I appreciate you.
It is. That's not something that easily fits onto a billboard or a digital ad campaign. But the admissions staff and the recruiters in the Division of Enrollment and Student Experience, that's a big part of the messaging that they take out onto the road and the conversations that they need to have with families so that they understand the value.
Just to follow up on that, I think I've shared with this group that I teach a capstone class in the College of Business, and one of the great joys in that is that they they walk in and they talk about their job interviews and then the jobs that they're getting. And so when you have a student come in and they're getting a starting salary at $60,000 or $70,000 or $80,000, you're reflecting it, oh my God, that's the kind of money they're getting. Those individual success stories. I've talked in my own department how it's like in recruiting sometimes, in college football recruiting, they send a little tweet up whenever someone raised the flag or something, and someone commits to a school. It's like, I feel like we should be raising the flag and shouting for joy for these individual successes. And I just, how do we show these people so they can see, I'm like that person. They're from my county, and now they are making how much to start? And that, you know, with your initial job, how it affects your lifetime earning, how much you're making that first one. So it's just, I don't know, those individual stories of success that we're seeing right now are so profound, and how do we get that message out? It's just...
Sure. If you watch the news channel, that we're adding more profiles and success stories to our outreach, because it is an incredibly powerful thing to see someone from your hometown or see someone with your area of interest who's been successful. It also means deepening our partnerships with the Alumni Association and the Division of Philanthropy and Alumni Engagement to better tell those stories of individuals who have graduated from WKU and had tremendous success, and bring them together, whether it's through an ambassador program where current students or prospective students are guided along by alumni of the university, or whether it's just the fact that we need to post more and increase the number of profiles and graduate current student and alumni profiles.
President
Capone. Chair, most of you know that my role before I came to Western Kentucky was the Vice Chancellor for Public Affairs at the University of Kansas. And what you saw today is state-of-the-art for education, communication, and marketing. The partnership with sub-brands and sub-units is outstanding and something that we've been working on for 3 years. But I would tell you, there are very few institutions in this nation that have both the brand strength, the commonality of message, the integration of data at the top of the funnel, and the collaboration across all of the different units. We have made tremendous strides. We have a strong platform to build from. But what you see here is elegant, it is efficient, it's effective, and it's something that is invisible to most folks at the institution. And so I'm thankful for a spotlight to be shown on the work that this division does, but also for our institution to be proud that when you look across the Commonwealth, when you look across the nation, this is state-of-the-art that we've built here, and we should be proud of it.
And then most importantly, when they get here, we introduce them to a world-class faculty like we saw today who delivers the goods, and that's when retention rates go up even further. Thank you all for a very nice presentation. Meaningful. President Cavone, you're next on the list.
I am. Regent Bale, Chair Bale, thank you. On occasion, I will, at least at our quarterly meetings, provide a bit of an update on what's been going on. And we've had lots of interesting things since our last quarterly meeting, not the least of which was tornado that came through campus. We're going to reflect upon that today. Other great things have happened that I want to bring to your attention, including our photojournalism students. We've had three students finish in the top 10 of the multimedia competition of Hearst this year. We're in fourth place in the photojournalism competition after the first two contests, and we're in third place in the multimedia competition after the first of four contests. So our world-class journalism and photojournalism programs continue to compete and win at a high level. Our Kentucky Folklife program received a National Endowment for the Arts grant to support their outreach work, and we're really proud of Folk Studies and Anthropology, a hallmark program for the university, and they're going to work to expand our Kentucky Folklife network here in the Commonwealth. You may have seen that CPE certified the cultural competency program at WKU, the first of its kind in the Commonwealth and a model for all of our other institutions. This is a certification process that will essentially help prepare our faculty to be more inclusive teachers. And it's a four-month program and professional development opportunity for all faculty that really focuses on deepening the knowledge of inclusive and culturally responsive teaching, as well as creating opportunities for them to apply evidence-based diversity, equity, inclusion principles to their course design and to their pedagogy. Really proud of 19 WKU students who earned Gilman scholarships for study abroad. 95% of those young people who applied for a scholarship received one. And this was this application cycle, we did remarkably well. Proud of these folks to be able to go abroad for internships. And it's particularly targeted to undergraduate health students. So very proud that this helps create opportunities that otherwise would not exist for these young people. WKU's online bachelor's programs ranked the highest in Kentucky and are among the top 35 in the nation. U.S. News and World Report ranked WKU's online bachelor's programs as the best in the state. They're based on our program's engagement, services, technology, faculty credentials, and training. We also receive rankings in best online bachelor's programs for veterans, best online master's in education for veterans, best online bachelor's in business programs, best online MBA programs for veterans, best online MBA programs, and best online master's in education. For those of you who are not aware, we offer over 80 online degree programs, including certificate, bachelor's, and master's degree programs. Our Doctor of Physical Therapy program was reaccredited and reaffirmed. We do this every 10 years, and that successful outcome is really important for the program and their ability not just to function, but to attract students. We're really proud that they have done this, and their first class was in the fall of 2013, so have made great progress since the inception of the program. We selected 17 students for our Cherry Presidential Scholarship. I had a tremendous group of young people interview, and are proud that they will be hopefully coming to the Hill this fall. That scholarship is our most prestigious award, as you know, and comes with a $16,000 annual support and is worth over $64,000 over a four-year period. A couple of other good things to announce. You will hear later this morning, you've heard a little bit of a nudge toward it, our tremendous fall to spring retention gains. I'm very proud of the work that we've done and how the First Year Village has influenced those. Our WKU forensics team, I'll end on this note and a couple of other scholarships. They won the 2022 state championship, that is the 30th consecutive year that WKU Forensics has won the state championship for the Kentucky Forensics Association. In the 13 speech categories, WKU students captured all 13 state titles. So an impressive performance by them. We have 12 students selected as semifinalists for the Critical Language Scholarships, working to create cultural immersion and language acquisition overseas. And we've had 9 WKU students selected as Fulbright Scholarship semifinalists. Truly an outstanding several months on the Hill with lots of performance and successes. I'm thankful for the work of the entire community, our faculty and staff, that even in the midst of challenges from a pandemic, a tornado, and any other things that we might face, that we've been able to continue our upward trajectory. I will end my president's report with a note or a notice and a comment that will lead into Chair Bale's next agenda item. And we all will note that we have one person who's not here with us in the meeting today, and that's our parliamentarian, Randy Capps. And many of you know that I had an important special relationship with Dr. Capps. He is the reason that I came here in 1993, and he was a special force on the Hill. He advised my 5 predecessors as president and me. He was a tremendous mentor, not just of me, but of former students who kept in touch with them over their lives and throughout their careers. He exemplifies what we do at this university, which is change individual lives, but do it through relationships. And I will miss Randy's good counsel. I will miss his ability to challenge
and ask hard questions, but never give direction. It was a tremendous loss for our community and for our board, and prayers to his family.
Well, that does lead into the last item, and I want to get into our minutes and record. Representative Patty Minter did get a citation of adjournment in honor of Dr. Capps. I won't read this, but it summarizes many of the things that he accomplished throughout his career, both at Western Kentucky University and otherwise. I think Dr. Capps certainly had influence on probably the large majority of the people in this room right now. And one thing that was really clear at his funeral and reception afterwards was that Randy had a gift in recognizing the potential in other people. And he had a way of inspiring those people to pursue that potential. And there are many, many success stories, including some several presidents of universities, as well as other highly successful people in the professional world and otherwise. And that really came clear at his funeral, how many people he influenced in that way. One of my favorite quotes, and it's attributed to various people, so I'm not sure who was original, Samuel Johnson's one of them, but the applause of a single human being is of great consequence. And Randy did that, and he may not have been clapping his hands, but it was the nod of the head and the smile. And we will all miss that, and I think in honor of him, one of the things we can do is continue to see the potential in this university, which he clearly saw that too, and work hard to achieve that. With that, I'll open the floor for any other comments. Anyone in the audience? Hard guy to lose. I've been informed we have a technical issue, and we're going to take a